This episode of The Line is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 180,000 titles for smartphone, tablet, and desktop. To get a free audiobook of your choice and help Trek.fm at the same time, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm. And also by Enterprise in Space, an international program of the nonprofit National Space Society. Find out how you can help science and education and become a virtual crew member aboard the NSS Enterprise Orbiter by visiting enterpriseinspace.org. And if you want to join the conversation and share your thoughts on this episode, join the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook. Just type B-A-B-E-L into the Facebook search field. We look forward to seeing you there.
You're listening to Trek FM.
Hello and welcome to Tracks on the Line, a podcast on Trek FM where we take a look at episodes of Star Trek Picard, provide audio commentaries for them while we're waiting for new Star Trek Picard, or any Star Trek Picard really. We're providing audio commentaries for Picard episodes and other things which may be related to the show.
Setting the stage.
Yeah.
Laying it out.
Yeah. I'm Mike.
And I'm Max.
And today we're going to do a commentary for Season 5, Episode 23 of Star Trek, The Next Generation, I, Borg.
I, Borg is the name of the episode.
Yes. Of course, Hugh is going to play a large role in Picard, so we're going to take a look at Hugh. So should we get this thing started?
Oh, yeah, let's do it.
All right. We are starting at zero on the counter on whatever format you choose to watch this episode on, except PAL might not work. I don't think PAL would really sync up. If you got your PAL DVDs, you might want to...
PAL is not your PAL.
No, no, not at all. All right. You ready?
Uh-huh.
Okay. We're going to start this up in 3, 2, 1, start. There is Enterprise flying through space. Oh, it's stopping. And there's like a dual star cluster system thingy.
This first beat of the episode, Troy does this line that's really, it's kind of awkward. She's like, it's beautiful. And then she looks at Picard and Riker and they're like nervous. And she's like, oh, but also terrifying. like when you're in a room and you're like, that's pretty funny. And everyone looks at you like, what's wrong with you? And you go, but in a tragic way, right? We're all on the same page here.
I don't know why they're, I mean, it's a weird thing to say, like, it's terrifying. Is it just so that they can say, like, oh, that might be a distress call? I don't know. Because it's not like there's any threat throughout the episode or anything. It's just like, they're like, oh, it's beautiful, but also terrifying. But we might want to live here.
The whole cold open is awkward.
Yeah. So it is kind of interesting, especially now with Discovery and everything like that and the production values that we have today. But, you know, back in 1991 or whenever this episode aired, it was like, oh, man, look at how much better the production values are on Star Trek The Next Generation than they are on the original series. And boy, you know, the original series just looks so fake. I just can't get into it. And now, you know, more time has passed between this and today than between this and the original series. And you look at these Planet Hell sets and it's like, ah, we were okay with that? Okay, well, whatever. And there is Third of Five, which really bothered me throughout watching this episode because it's 7 of 9, but it's not 3 of 5, it's 3rd of 5. I mean, I guess maybe the Borg changed their naming conventions or something.
Well, it's 7th is awkward to say. And also, the Borg don't pronounce things the same way a lot. So it's possible that other Borg refer to him as 3 of 5 And he refers to himself as third of five.
Or I know, I remember too, like, Voyager, they like modified Seven's name. Like, because she's like seven of nine of adjunct.
Tertiary adjunct of Unimatrix 01.
Yeah. And, you know, Janeway was just like, I'm just going to call you seven of nine.
Mm-hmm.
Which, you know, is kind of offensive when you think about it in like real world terms, but you know, whatever.
I'm just going to call you Steve.
Right. Like, I don't know how to pronounce that. I'm just going to call you Max.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just, it's what you do. And I don't think that they really care that much about you getting their terminology right.
That's true.
They're not sticklers about being referred to correctly.
I mean, it happens in this episode, really, right? Where they're like, that's not a name. Like, geez. I mean, you got this whole episode is about, like, you know, seeing value in the other, right? Mm-hmm. Even when the other is, you know, doesn't see value in you, right? And then they're like, what's your name? And he's like, the third of five. And they're like, that's not a name.
Mm-hmm.
Let's call you Hugh. It's like, okay, well, then let's do that then. Okay, cool, guys. Anyway. So, yes, there is third of five. And they're going to bring him back up to the ship and try to save his life. It's cool.
Yep. And, you know, it's an interesting, this is a weird episode where it's like, conceptually speaking, like they're dealing with like the question of like the Borg and individuality, and like the Borg are dangerous, but like individuals, they're not all that threatening. It's complicated, man. This one opened a lot of doors, and they did eventually start paying them off. It's just interesting.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think that too. It goes beyond that to say, like, not just the individual may not be dangerous, but the individual may not hold the same values as that society. So, like, I think, like, there's the conversation, which we'll get to, you know, later on, between Hugh and Picard, and like that conversation could have gone a different way, and I think Picard would have reacted differently. But, you know,
well, that's the thing. It isn't really a society. Like, well, it's a yeah. system. Like the Borg don't fit the model of like even like a fascist society where somebody doesn't have any choice and they're part of a system that like takes ownership of them. Because like the Borg, they don't have the ability to decide if they're going along with the plan or not. Like you can't have a revolution in the Borg because your consciousness is shared. So like Voyager dealt with that pretty significantly. Like the only way you can have a revolution in the Borg is if like it exists in like a locked off section of the data that they don't have access to outside of it. And that's how Unimatrix Zero, like that whole plot line was this crazy thing, which somehow had almost the exact same name as where 709 was from, but whatever. It's weird stuff, and it's like they don't have a society, they don't have a culture, they don't have a civilization to speak of. They have a system, and like I think that like Next Gen did deal with the morality of like, can we fight this system without fighting the individuals trapped in it? And I think this episode says, no, we really can't. We can't destroy this system without killing the people locked into it. So we have to find another way of fighting that system.
Yeah. And it's interesting, too, just from like a long-term storytelling perspective. Because like growing up, I mean, I guess it was weird because like I came into Star Trek during season 6 of Next Gen. So this was like one of the last episodes that aired before I got on board watching Star Trek. And because of that, it always seemed like the distant past, like anything prior to season six of Next Generation was something that happened in the long ago times. Because
in the age of myth.
Right, exactly.
And legend.
Exactly. And when Hugh shows up in Descent Part One, I'm like, whoa, they're bringing back that character, right? From that legacy character. But really, it was only...
From last year.
Yeah, it was only like a year and three episodes. It was like less than 13 months that we had seen him, you know? But that's not what it felt like to me.
Well, no, I mean, even for me, it was a big deal. Because at this point, Star Trek still had been real light on continuity.
Yeah.
So when something like an individual episode like element got continued later on, it was huge. Like lore and the crystal identity thing that came and came back and then went and it came back. That sort of thing that became a little, you know, signpost of continuity. And I was always excited about that. Because the more continuity there was, the more believable it was that this ship could be flying through space and there are real people on it and that kind of thing. Because, you know, threats don't go away in 42 minutes. Mm-hmm. So, like, when they brought Hugh back in Descent, I was like, oh my god, they're bringing together a lot of threads in this. Because, like, Lore's back, Hugh is here. This is like, wow. This is particular fan service for like one demographic, the people who are like, guys, make me believe in this universe. You know, have some consequences for your previous episodes because that needs to be there.
But it's also this thing where like this felt like of all the Borg episodes, this was almost like the throwaway Borg episode to me prior to Descent because the other ones were big in scope, right? You had like Q Who, where it's like, oh man, the Borg are introduced and, you know, we're seeing on the ship. Then you have Best of Both Worlds, obviously. And then there's this one. And it's like, well, it's just a like one guy, right? It's almost not like a real Borg episode in that those are usually like the big tentpole blockbuster episodes. And this is sort of like a quiet thing. And it was almost like a quiet reflection on the Borg, in a sense. You know what I mean?
No, I know what you mean. Because, like, when you, in retrospect, like, when you think back on, like, what happens in this episode, like, they find a Borg. Geordi talks to it. Guinan talks to it. Picard talks to him. And they send him back to the Borg.
Yeah.
And like it's just four conversations.
Right. And the, you know, the way that these things wrap up is usually, I mean, Next Generation is not like X-Files. Next Generation isn't like there's this big mystery, what's going on? Nobody knows and nobody ever will, you know? Like each episode of Next Gen has like some sort of conclusion, even if it's just speculation, but you kind of like take that on face value, you know? And in this one, they're like, well, he's going to go back and he's going to get reassimilated and that's going to be the end of him. But maybe for just a split second, the Borg will experience individuality. Right?
Yes.
And that's it. And we, like when we saw, you know, the trailers or whatever for Descent Part One, and they're like, the Borg are coming back. It's like, oh my God, what's going to happen? And then, you know, we find out like, well, what happened is this little teeny tiny episode with the four conversations basically upended the Borg system, right?
Yep.
And that's pretty cool. I'm super curious to know whether or not that was planned. I kind of think it wasn't, but I'm curious.
Well, I assume that like they thought when we bring the Borg back, we need to have some new threat because the Borg can't just reappear and be the same issue.
Yeah.
it has to be something new. And so when they came up with the idea for this, they were like, well, the next time we do it, like, the Borg can be in chaos. And I do believe it was at least planned to that extent. Like, they're like, yeah, when we see the Borg next time, this will have screwed them up.
See, I the reason why I don't think that's true is because I don't think that they necessarily were ever planning to bring the Borg back.
I don't think they necessarily were, but they thought, like, if we bring the Borg back, this is how we do it.
Maybe. I my guess as to how it went down is, and I'm sure that it's probably documented somewhere at this point, but my guess would be they made this episode in just sort of a bubble. They gave the ending as it is just so that there isn't a chance of continuity messing things up, you know, so that you can watch all of these in any order that you want, really. And then someone, I guess it was Ron Moore, I think, who wrote Descent, he was like, oh, you know what? What if it messed everything up? And then that's how we got Descent Part 1. But I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think it really matters that much. What matters is that it works.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, people criticize Descent because of, like, the data element of it, but the Borg element of it is pretty strong.
You know, it's one of those episodes where I haven't watched it very many times at all. I don't remember much about it. What I remember more than anything is the first episode blowing my mind and waiting that whole summer for part two, and then part two not living up to my expectations of it. So I'm excited to go back and rewatch it in the coming weeks or months. And yeah. See what it's all about.
Yeah, it's interesting. Like, I think that this episode also is recontextualized in some ways by later Borg plot lines, because the original plan of, like, the geometric paradox, that wouldn't have worked. Like, because they have the Borg Queen. Like, the system would have been able to correct itself if that had been introduced.
And, I mean, certainly we've seen that happen in the past with Starfleet. I mean, best of both worlds, there are numerous times where they were like, this is how we're going to beat them, and then it doesn't work, right?
Yeah.
So I think that's cool. But at the same time, like, the plan that they have, I don't know if it really seemed solid to begin with. And also, it seemed like a lot of work. I mean, instead of, like, creating this, like, shape or whatever in order to cause, like, a logic error, it's like, why not just, you know, upload a copy of, like, Mulholland Drive or something, you know?
Because it's not that it's such nonsense that it makes no logical sense. Like, they describe it, and the system that they describe is so complicated that, like, the research and development of that particular problem must have been epic and fascinating and intricate, because they're like, the paradox itself doesn't cause the problem. It's the erroneous solutions to the paradox that eventually combine Voltron style to destroy the Borg from within.
Okay.
Which is bananas complicated. So, I don't know how they came up with that so fast, but I think that there should be a 10,000-page novel about the development of that image.
Well, maybe that'll be the next short trek.
No, it needs to be a 10,000-page novel detailing how that works and how they came up with it, because that is the craziest, most complicated, like, malware injection I've ever heard of. Like, it's not the response isn't what breaks the system. It's the responses interacting with the other responses to that problem. That's crazy.
Yeah. So here they get to reuse the set from Best of Both Worlds, Part 2.
And where Data made LOL.
Oh, yeah, I guess that's true too, huh?
Mm-hmm. Like, they have these things lying around, and they reuse them all the time.
Yeah.
Chunks of this also reappeared on Voyager.
I'm sure it did. Yep. That's one of the cool things. Like, if you go back and you listen to the commentary that Ron Moore and I believe Michael Taylor did for Star Trek III, The Search for Spock, the whole time Ron Moore is just like, oh, we reused those costumes on Next Gen. We reused mm-hmm. that set on Deep Space Nine. You know, yeah, kind of cool.
Yeah, like none of the props got one use. They all reappeared, and sometimes in annoying ways. Like, there's no way that reappears without it being just some prop for the background.
I think my favorite prop, which gets reused a billion times, is from Enterprise, where they took a Radio Shack sound meter, painted it silver, turned it upside down, and used that as random engineering tool for whatever yep. needed to be fixed.
Random engineering tool number 47. Yeah, there's so much prop reusage, and like some of the props don't even like stop getting reused at Star Trek. There's a prop that keeps showing up in Star Trek that's also in The Last Starfighter.
Mm.
And it is just visual nonsense.
All right. Hugh's starting to ask questions, starting to figure things out.
So here's the thing that bugs me. The hologram over his eye,
mm-hmm.
that's supposed to like give us the visual impression that those lines go into his skull.
Well, they do say it's holographic.
Yeah. It's silly looking.
But it is the most 90s thing you will ever see.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's the kind of, like, hologram that you get free in your cereal box.
Yeah.
That, like, you put as a sticker onto your NES.
This whole scene bothers me. I mean, aside from the whole, like, let's give him a name or whatever, like, what's your name? And then they name him. But also, like, the way they do it is, like, so condescending. They're like, I'm Beverly, he's Geordi, and you, and then he goes, you, and then Geordi says, that's it, Hugh, and then
yeah.
and then Hugh's like, you? Which is what he said in the first time, and then Geordi's like, no, dummy, Hugh, and he's like, that's not what, but you just, whatever, you know what I mean? It's just like,
I get it, you hate Geordi.
I mean, in this episode, like, I give him a pass because, you know, whatever, he saved Hugh and stuff, and he's, you know, kind of like ahead of the curve in terms of, you know, his humanity and everything. But for the most part, I mean, like, at the beginning of this episode, I'm like, man, what a jerk. And I do think that that's how the character was written. I do think that's how the character was played. I'm not faulting anyone for it. I think they wanted to make him kind of a jerk, and they did. And they were successful at that. You know?
I think that, to me, he has the vibe of a lot of people in IT.
Yeah.
Where it's like, every time, like, their phone rings, it's somebody with a problem.
Uh-huh.
And they know, like, okay, now I've got to go solve their problem because they don't understand how this works. And it gets frustrating over time. And you get to the point where you're like, yeah, I got it. Yeah, no, it's fine.
No,
I got it.
I get that. But at the same time, I mean, what I always think of is like there was one time where I was like hanging out with a bunch of like projectionists and they were all telling their stories about like how dumb the people that they work with are, right? And like, he didn't know how to fix this problem. And it's like, well, that's because that's not his job. And that's why you have a job. It's because people need to fix this problem, and you're the person who knows how to do that. So why are you complaining, and why are you making fun of this other guy who does a whole bunch of stuff that you don't do? Because he doesn't know how to do your job. That's the impression that I get with Jordy, you know? I don't know. He's just, he's a great engineer. Yeah, he saved Hugh here, and that's cool, and all that stuff. But I would not want to hang out with this dude. I'm just saying.
I get it. Yep, he's got to be difficult to work with because he's all about the job, man. He's a real company guy, you know. he's like the guy who's like at the office, like, what are you checking Facebook? What are you doing, buddy? Come on.
Yeah.
We're on the clock here.
Yeah. And here we have Guinan. It's cool that they're able to bring her back.
Yeah, I'm checking Facebook. What are you going to do about it?
Yeah. No, but here the roles are reversed, kind of, you know?
Yeah, because here Guinan is like, yeah, it's a Borg. You know, they're bad.
Yeah.
Have you not been paying attention?
Right.
Like, we've been dealing with this for two seasons now.
Yeah, and she's been dealing with good. It way longer than that. I mean, her entire race was essentially wiped out by the Borg, you know?
Yeah.
Oh, so here's the jacket.
The jacket's been this episode for almost the whole time. He's been just walking around with it unzipped.
Oh, I thought this was the first time we saw it.
No.
Okay. Well, regardless, I like the jacket a lot. I would totally rock that jacket, but I think it's made by Anovo, so if I were to try to purchase it, it would never show up. So so I guess I'll never have the jacket. But it's still cool looking. And I like that, you know, right around the same time in the movies, Kirk gets a similar jacket. I mean, it doesn't look the same or anything like that, but conceptually it's the same. Like, captains get jackets. How come there aren't any jackets on Discovery yet? Well, I guess there's no captains on Discovery, so that...
Yeah, and they don't really go that many places.
I don't know, but this is a casual jacket. This is a... it's cool.
This is a striding around.
Yeah, you know,
forward
it's,
jacket.
It's winter, so it's a little bit chilly. You know, yeah, I'm gonna get
winter on the Enterprise.
Gonna get my tea, Earl Grey, hot, and my jacket. It's the coolest jacket. I would rock that jacket all the time. And also, when he takes the jacket off and he's got his like undershirt thing with like the, it that looks good too. I think if you watch like the very early episodes, or maybe it's even just the first one that he wears it in, which is Darmok. It's like a shiny leather on the top, and then they changed it to like suede or something like that. There's some variation there, but they made it better. So
yeah, it has a weird texture to it that almost like to me looks like crushed velvet in a weird way.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is not a great look, but it seems to work for that jacket on that person.
Yeah.
So I don't know if other people could pull off that jacket. It might not be a great idea.
This episode really is. I mean, you were talking about like the four conversations, but when you break it down even further, it's there's a Borg, kill it, and then Beverly's like, "Well, how about we don't? Let's talk to it." And then like Geordi's like, "I don't know what you're doing talking to that Borg," and she's like, "Well, why don't you just talk to him?" And then he talks to the Borg, and then you know, Guinan's like, "I don't know what you're doing talking to the Borg." And Geordi's like, "Well, why don't you just talk to him?" And then she talks to him, and then Guinan goes to Picard, and he's like, "I don't know what you're doing talking to that Borg." And Guinan's like, "Well, why don't you just talk to him?"
Yep.
And then Picard's like, "I talked to him. I'm thinking maybe we shouldn't kill him anymore."
Yeah.
I mean, it works, though. But I mean, like, can you imagine, like, trying to break down the beats of this episode? It's like, well, this is what it's going to be.
Dude, the pitch for this episode must have been nuts. Like, here's what happens. They find a Borg, they plan to kill it, and then they decide not to because they talk to it. And it's like, how... That doesn't seem like a full episode. And they're like, no. It takes like 4 steps. And they're like, oh, okay. All right. I'm on board. Mm-hmm. But like, it's really, it is Hugh's episode. Like, he's the star of it. He's in all the scenes. Like,
I see it being more as Geordi's episode because he seems to be sort of like the fulcrum in a sense. And the thing with Hugh, while he is in all the scenes, it's never from his perspective, you know?
No, because he's the object of the scene that everyone's talking about. And too, it's like, it's definitely like a Geordi heavy episode, but like this episode is about convincing the audience that Hugh exists, that it isn't just a projection of the people talking to this Borg, that it is actually a person standing there. And like, it's not just this particular appendage of this evil that they've been dealing with for years. It's a person that's there and everyone talking to it. Like, they're like, I guess it is a person. And that's hard to reconcile with what we've seen of them. So like, that's what the episode's about. So it does really have to be a bunch of conversations with a Borg.
Yeah.
Like, otherwise it doesn't work.
Yeah, I agree. But I see in a lot of ways, it's not so much about how they changed the Borg. It's about how the Borg changed them. You know what I mean?
Yeah, so what? It doesn't matter. It's the same. It's the same thing. Like, it's about this Borg. Like, he's there. He's the issue. He's the star of this episode.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm not sure I agree with that, but that's fine. Whatever. It's all semantics.
And this crazy shape.
Yep.
I don't know about you, but that shape makes sense to me. It's all good.
It makes a lot more sense than that one test that they had where they're like, what does this shape look like when it's inside out? And I mean, I know the whole point of that is to be like, wow, this guy's like really good with his like spatial orientation and stuff like that, whatever. But like, I look at that shape and I'm like, can you turn that shape inside out?
Like, I remember seeing that originally and going like, the blob? Like, it's like, I couldn't make out any details on it. And in like high def, I'm like, Oh, it's a very detailed image. I just couldn't see any of it.
Yeah.
Because of, you know, broadcast television. But like, now I'm like, oh yeah, you'd need to like have like some sort of like processing for that sort of orientation, because like it's basically like you create a model and then like invert all of the structures of it somehow. I'm not sure how you would invert them without just making like an inside out version of it, and it would look exactly the same. It's weird.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, what does it even mean, inside out? Like, what's the inside out version of a sphere? You know,
it's a sphere.
That's what I thought. Well, what do I know?
An inside out version of a sphere is just a sphere with like the exterior facing inside.
Yeah. Picard's sleepwear, not nearly as cool as his jacket.
I don't know. I think he's got a real, like, Ebenezer Scrooge kind of vibe. I think it's cool.
I'm not sure I go with, like, Ebenezer Scrooge. I think it's more like, almost like Hugh.
You don't think he looks like a turn-of-the-century Englishman? And, like, he put on a nightcap and, like, light a candle?
Maybe it's just like the open. Maybe it's like Ebenezer Scrooge crossed with Hugh Hefner.
I have actually said that before on this show.
I don't remember that, but okay.
It, when we did All Good Things, I was like his like half Hugh Hefner, half like Ebenezer Scrooge, yeah. Like nightgown look.
Yeah, I didn't listen to that episode.
Because it's got the deep V. You were on it. It's got the deep V, and it's got like the nondescript gray draping of Ebenezer Scrooge's nightdress.
Mm. Yeah.
It's a weird look for sure. If I like, I have pajamas. They don't look like that. I like. I don't like a lot of like hanging parts in my pajamas because they get tangled up when I'm sleeping.
Yeah, I usually just have like pajama pants and then like a sweatshirt. You know.
Yeah. Sweatshirt seems a little thick, but whatever.
It gets cold in my apartment.
Yeah.
I don't
know. It never gets cold enough for me.
Well, you live in freaking Florida, so you know.
When I lived in the same area as you, I could never wear a sweatshirt. I would sweat.
Yeah.
I don't quite get this. Like, Picard's like, yeah, I'll talk to the Borg, but make him come here. To my office, so it's on my terms, where, you know, we don't have a force field in between the two of us. That's a good idea, right? Put him on the defensive. Make him feel threatened. Right? That's good.
Well,
that's smart.
Well, I mean, I think story-wise, you could say, like, Picard's one of those managers who doesn't leave the office, right? But from a production standpoint, I imagine there was certainly a discussion about how many scenes were in the jail room. That's what they call it, right?
The holding cell?
Yeah. And they probably were like, let's make this a little more visually interesting by moving it into the ready room.
Yeah. I mean, they have some 10 forward scenes. They have some scenes in that android/Borg investigation/research room.
Mm-hmm.
And they have a couple scenes in the captain's offices and one in his quarters. It's a bottle episode, man.
Yep. But it works. Sometimes the bottle episodes are the best episodes.
Ships and bottles.
And we just got one.
Great fun.
On Short Treks, we got Q&A, right? So
yeah, that's more like an airplane bottle episode because it's such a small space.
Yeah. It's kind of a weird tactic for him to be like, I'm Locutus. And he's like, this is weird, you know? But at the same time, like, I feel like there's a lot of stuff here that Hugh doesn't know that he should know. Like, well, Locutus was unassimilated, right? So clearly he's not Locutus. And then there's also the whole thing, like, I mean, just like little things like, what's a doctor? And it's like, I get that thematically what they're going for because he's like, we don't have doctors. But at the same time, if you've assimilated like all of these cultures, you know what a doctor is.
Yeah, you get the question of, like, what do the Borg always know? Like, what information is absorbed into each individual Borg versus what information is stored externally to each individual Borg that they just have access to?
Yeah.
Because, like, when they're in the cube, you go, okay, fine, they're on the cloud. Like, so, like they can just, like, pull up Wikipedia for every word someone says.
Yeah.
So, fine, they understand everything that's going on. But, like, when they're off of that, when they're off the network, like, how much information is in their heads? And on Voyager, it seems like Seven's got a lot of it still in there.
I mean, I guess that's an interesting way of thinking about it, which I never would have considered back in the day. But now that we all have cell phones, I guess the equivalent would really kind of be, like, if Hugh crash-landed on this ship and he didn't have his cell phone. And I now have a much greater understanding of his loneliness and that void in his life. Because if I was without my phone for this period of time, I honestly don't know what would happen.
You'd be like, man, there are probably so many Pokemon on this ship. And I can't do anything about it.
I'd be like, what's going on Twitter now?
Yeah, that's probably not great. That's probably not great. Maybe you should crash land sometimes and see how you feel afterwards, because I think you might come out of it feeling pretty refreshed.
I mean, honestly, that's one of the many, many reasons why I see so many movies in movie theaters. I mean, you know, I'll see like 200 movies in theaters a year, like easily. And that's not an exaggeration. And, you know, I mean, just last night, I could have stayed at home and watched El Camino in my living room, but instead I drove all the way out to the city to see it on the big screen. The screen wasn't even that big. But just the idea of, like, you have that time in sort of like an isolation booth where you cannot use your phone and you have to focus on what's on screen and you're not checking Twitter while you're watching something.
Yeah, you know, you don't need to do that to not have your phone on.
It's a psychological thing.
Oh, I mean, I think like I've talked. What I like to do, I have made it a fun little game to use my phone until it dies,
mm-hmm.
and then it's dead. Then I gotta charge it, whatever, and I'm not gonna turn it on until it's at 100%.
Okay,
so
well, that's is that why you never return my text messages?
Sure, let's go with that.
Okay. but yeah, no, this is what it is. Anyway, so here, Hugh, stepping up to the streets, and he's, you know, embracing the needs of the many outweigh the needs of the Hugh, and he's gonna,
oh God.
He's gonna go back to the collective, so.
Yep. Because Hugh, he gets it. Like he gets it. And he likes Geordi.
Wait till he meets some other people. He's going to be like the greatest people person.
The thing is, Geordi gets along with non-human, like someone slightly to the left of like a real person. Mm-hmm. Like, he gets along well with holograms, yep, androids, and Borg. Like,
yeah.
Geordi's people, his demo is not a demographic. Like, his demo is the census itself.
I mean, it is kind of interesting when you think about that. And, I mean, maybe that says something about his personality. And I don't know. I wonder if that was intentional or not. But the idea of, like, he doesn't, I mean, in a lot of ways, it's probably reflective of Trekkies, right? I mean, just people in, I mean, certainly,
yeah.
You know, I mean, that was me in high school and everything like that. It's like, I don't get along with my mainstream classmates, right? I'm not going to high school football games or anything like that. And yet there are these cool kids who sit on the other side of the cafeteria. There's only like three of them, and one of them is a Borg, one of them is a hologram, one of them is an android, and, yep. And those are the people that, maybe I've turned around, maybe Geordi isn't really a bad guy anymore, maybe he's just, you know, sick and tired of
He is an IT nerd. He gets along with, like, not regular people. His demographic is not, strictly speaking, a demographic. He is an IT nerd. He gets along with the Borg slash goth. He gets along with the android slash math nerd. He gets along with the hologram slash fake girlfriend from Canada. like, this is who he is. Geordi is one of our people, and your continued assaults on his character will not stand.
It doesn't change the fact that he's still a jerk, you know? But whatever. But it may explain why he's a jerk. So here's something which has bothered me throughout the entire rewatch of this episode. Hugh's shoes are Hughes way shoes. Too big.
Hughes shoes.
Look at him trying to walk around. And I don't know whether they built the costume first or whatever, but they're like, here, let's give him these shoes, which are probably, you know, like a size 15, you know?
I want to write a children's book about Hugh, and it's going to be called Hugh's New Shoes.
There you go.
And he gets a new pair of shoes that actually fit him, and he's a much happier Borgling.
Well, maybe that'll be the short trek. Maybe.
Oh, Hugh.
Yeah.
Your shoes are too big, Hugh. He'll grow into them.
Yes, he will. Yeah.
Actually, that's a good question. How old is Hugh?
Well, they said he's an adolescent, right?
So he's a teen?
I think that's the idea. I think he's supposed to be a teen. I mean, as far as like how old Jonathan Del Arco was at the time, I'm guessing he was in his early 20s. But we can try to find that out.
Because he does, he is like sort of shorter than everyone else. And he does look like the youngest person in the scene a lot of the time. So, like, it's difficult to say because of all the makeup, but he does seem very young.
Well, it looks like he was 26 years old when he shot this.
Wow. Yeah. How about that?
Yeah. Yeah.
So there's this beat where Hugh is, like, you know, reborgified, and then, like, there's a hint that maybe something is still happening. Individual kind of feelings. It's interesting.
Well, okay, where is he reborgified? I mean, is that what happened? He was reborgified?
Well, they like put a little probe onto him, and he was like, all right, back to being normal Borg
okay.
behavior.
Okay.
Walking straight ahead.
I guess, but then he looks over at Geordi, and Geordi's like, wait, yeah. What? I can see that. It's a cool little subtle beat. I like it.
Yeah, I mean, it's a hint that there's still something there, and that maybe it'll remain for a while. And I don't know, like, they kept the continuity of this sort of behavior for a long time, and through Voyager, when they really dug into the Borg, and there are very few, I would say, issues with continuity, and I resolve them by saying, oh, the Borg just changed their protocol, or different Borg have different responsibilities, so they treat them differently. But, you know, Hugh, let's say Hugh did not have external memory storage, mm-hmm. so he just remembered stuff that he was personally exposed to, and it didn't have access to all sorts of stuff, so he didn't know what a doctor was.
I mean, that makes sense now. I buy it. I buy it. It works for me. All right. So that was iBorg.
That was iBorg, uBorg, weBorg, meBorg.
Yep. So we'll be back in a couple of weeks to take a look at it.
I got to write a lot of children's books based on Borg.
We'll be back in a couple of weeks to take a look at another episode of Star Trek. This time, we're going to switch things up a little bit. And
switch them ups.
We're going to do some Voyager. Yeah?
Voyage.
Specifically, I guess what's considered to be the best episode of Voyager, Scorpion, Part 1 in particular. So that'll be fun. But until then, we'd love to hear your thoughts on Picard and iBorg. And the best place to do that is in the Babel Conference, which is our listeners group on Facebook. You can also find us on Twitter at TrekFM, and you can email us if you go to trek.fm/contact and choose the line. So, Max, where can people find you on the internet?
I'm on Twitter at jmikeshagel. Doing a bunch of random stuff. Can't think of anything at the time.
All right. You can find me on Twitter and Letterboxd at Mumbles3K. And you can also find me on FilmDamagePod.com with you, doing a show called Film Damage.
You can find me there.
And you can find me on TheNerdParty.com doing a show called Retro Perspective. And in December, you'll be able to find me on Talk Film Society doing a new show called Bayhem, which is a Michael Bay retrospective podcast.
Or retrospective.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that's pretty much it for this week. And until next time, The line must be drawn where?
Underneath the 23rd on your calendar for January, because Picard is coming back.